You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the show. My guest today, who you're going to love, her name is Angel Jufria, and she is a self-described bionic actress. Yeah, you heard that right. She's a congenital amputee. She is missing and was born with, that's what congenital means, with missing her arm from just below her elbow on her left arm. So she has had a prosthetic before and now has what they refer to as a bionic arm, and it's amazing. You're going to really like this. You can hear, I mean, we talk about it so much in depth and how it works and all the other types of improvements in this type of technology and how it relates to transhumanism at large, which is, you know, mixing people and machines, which is certainly in our both present and future, even more so in the future, obviously. But you can, like, hear her arm moving and making robotic sounds and beeps in this interview. I think you're going to really enjoy it as much as I did. She's an actress. She's done some great stuff. She was in the Hunger Games, although not a big part. She said it got cut down to about a second or so. But she's a real actress doing a lot of stuff, and we talk about bionics and what it's like to, you know, do all the stuff that she does. And she's very, very positive and easy to talk to and doesn't make you feel weird to ask weird questions. And I very much enjoyed the conversation. So will you. I got to tell you about the sponsor, which is Rockabilia. As usual, there are people are getting good merchandise from them. Rock band stuff, pop culture stuff, hats, beanies, posters, hoodies. Get you a good hoodie. Don't get one down at, you know, H&M. Get one here that says your favorite band's name on it. That's what I recommend you do. This stuff's officially licensed. Rockabilia is a great company. They've got everything. Go to rockabilia.com and use the promo code PCJabberjaw. You'll get 15% off of whatever you order if you use that. All right, let's do the show.
Break it down, Dada.
Break it down, oh, break it down. Break it down, oh, break it down. Break it down, oh, break it down. Break it down, oh, break it down.
Like Matt Cutter.
Yeah. Angel, thank you for being on today. I've been listening to some other stuff you've done and interviews and read the article. And what was that, Popular Science? Was that the article?
Yeah, I had a couple. Popular Science is one of them, yeah.
That's great. I love everything in Popular Science. And at first, I was worried to talk to you because, you know, it occurs to me that obviously talking about this and having a bionic or a prosthetic arm, you know, it's got to be the thing that you just have to have the conversation 10 million times. So I feel guilty just going in, like, I want to ask a bunch of questions about it. But how do you deal with that? You must just have to talk about it all the time. It's got to get old.
I mean, so I was born without my arm, right? Mm-hmm. So I've been doing this most of my life. I've been wearing a prosthetic since I was 6 weeks old. Mm-hmm. So I've kind of just grown up talking to people about it. And it really does become like, it is definitely a part of my day. Like, no matter where I go, I actually went to a show last night and I was shocked that nobody asked. I was like, this is the first time I think I've gone out in a while that I haven't heard anything. But at the same time, my arm is pretty noticeable. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, metal and it has covers on it. I occasionally have lights in it. So the idea is awesome. Like, I'm not trying to hide. You know what I mean? It's more so like if people come up, they're like, I'm so sorry that I'm asking about it. I'm like, it's fine. Yeah. I want to turn the lights off otherwise.
Yeah. Okay, good. And I, you know, if it was me and it was in person and it was just a normal human interchange, I would avoid asking about it. Probably. I wouldn't be scared or anything. I think I would acknowledge it, but I would think the manners would tell me not to ask a bunch of questions that you must get all the time, but I will in the podcast, of course. But is that even fundamentally something you wish people would? Of course, it must bother you if people try to avoid it or act like it's not there. That's got to be weird too, right? So, what is the normal
typically
line?
It's
for
like
you?
my three sentence rule. I would prefer if we have some sort of like, even if it's a person at the grocery store, right? Someone mm-hmm. checking me out for groceries. Like, oh, how are you? I'm like, I'm good. You know, just something about my day. And it's like, oh, that's cool. I'll typically get that. They'll point to my arm and say, oh, that's cool. Like, yeah. You know, that kind of thing. And how does that work? That I don't mind. That's fine with me. There are the weird times where, like, I'm in an elevator and you have someone walk in, like, oh, how'd you lose your arm? And hi, I'm Angel. Nice to meet you.
Oh, man. Okay, that's really helpful because it actually, you know, demonstrates at least for you a line of what is good and bad manners. So that is actually helpful. Now, I want to give people some context to some things, that who you are and what you do, and then we'll get technical and about some stuff that I'm curious about. But so the easiest way to say is this is Angel, and you're are predominantly thinking of yourself as an actress. Is that that's your career now and everything? Congratulations to that. You've been in the Hunger Games.
Yeah, that was one of the first things I started out at. You can see me for about a quarter of a second because how film works is you get cut out and nobody tells you, right?
Yes, I was an extra in a movie, and me and my friends were all extras in a movie one time, and you know, you can see it for a half second there. But what you're doing there is real acting, and where you have a scene and all this stuff, and then it gets cut down.
Yeah, they don't really tell you when that happened. Yeah. That happened to me also. I did a movie with Ben Affleck called The Accountant.
Uh-huh.
And I had a scene with John Lithgow, and we did this really cool scene where I got to show him how my arm worked. And, you know, we were doing all this stuff. And then when it ended up in the movie, it's literally about, you know, a quarter of what it was supposed to be. Oh. My name's still in the credits. That's all that matters. But, you know.
What are you credited as? What does it say?
Robotics lab patient.
Lab patient. Very good.
Yeah.
And so how did you get... Well, how about it this way? For you to do acting, is it always going to be, I don't know if it would be called character acting or specialty?
No, I see what you're saying.
Is it going to be related to, or how much do you embrace or not want? How much is your prosthetic or bionic arm related to?
You know, I mean, so casting? Hopefully not. So, right, this is what they're working for right now in Hollywood, right, is to diversify what they're doing, right? They're big on trying to present the world accurately because, you know, they haven't been doing that very well.
Right.
So the idea is, most of the roles that I've played so far are bionic this, amputee that, you know, some type of adjective that describes my limb difference or my prosthesis use. And I think that's important because someone with a limb difference and someone with a prosthesis should be playing those roles. Those shouldn't be played by people pretending, right?
We shouldn't take other people and CGI prosthetic arms.
Right. It's not okay to pretend to be any other minority. Why are we still pretending to be people with, like, physical differences? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
That's interesting to think about. It takes a second for somebody who hadn't thought about it, though, to think about it. So I think I understand that, obviously, in the Native American casting where you have people dress up like that versus hire those actors. And then, of course, race stuff is weird like that.
Yeah.
And then there's been a thing about little people or midgets and stuff where are they supposed to be cast, or can other people play short people or you know, that kind of thing. But I haven't thought about it into this realm or okay. Now I've pinned myself into another question that feels awkward. Is this a disability? Do you think of
I know
that?
You're going to say that. So
I don't mind
the word disability.
Case,
so there are so within my community, so I have a congenital limb difference or a congenital amputee. Some people don't like the word. They like to say I'm not disabled. And the problem I have with that is the reason that they're saying that is because they think disability is bad. You know what I mean? You're automatically saying that disability is a bad word.
Right.
Like my friends that'll say, Angel, I would never consider you disabled. And I was like, that's because you think disability is a bad thing. Like it's just a way to classify. Like all of us are going to need some sort of accessibility needs. I need insurance needs to help me provide for my prosthesis, right? I need that type of healthcare. So we all just need some sort of accessibility difference. And the idea that disability was a way that they could describe that, that's fine. The word maybe not, you know, disability, the idea that you're like not able.
It's inherently a negative connotation.
I think people assume that you're not able. You're saying, I'm not able.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not able because the way this task was designed. It was designed for four-limbed people, like people who have four limbs that walk upright and that hear and see. And like, you know, the task was designed for a specific, you know, general, as opposed to if the task was designed for, you know, anyone, someone who had no arms, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone would be able to do it, right? You know, everyone who had any type of limb difference, like depending on how the task, like why is there not ramps everywhere instead of stairs? Because everyone can go up a ramp, but not everyone can go upstairs. So I think the term disability to me has more to do with the environment. We're disabled by the fact that the environment looks the way it looks and we have to react to that.
Yeah. Okay.
So I don't mind the words. There are people, so just as a general rule, for how I would go about it, I would wait until someone else uses it. But I accept it, and I think it's something that the community should embrace, but I would never tell somebody what they have to do with, you know, how they see themselves.
Thank you for helping me clear that up as I'm stumbling into it. Something I do have noticed and like about you, and correct me where and if I'm wrong, but it seems that you have this attitude that is very much embracing the technological aspect, and it seems not to bother you, not only that you have to talk about robotics and muscles and how they hook up. And seems like that you really are interested in that and know a lot about it. And it also seems like you're very, let's see if this, tell me how you put this in your brain, but you seem to not be the type of person to embrace victimhood, if I'm saying that. I don't know how that resonates to you, but from other things I've heard you do and say, you're very positive on this. And is that, am I saying that correctly?
Yeah. So what I would say is specifically when you talk to people who were born this way, right? Mm-hmm. This is our norm. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times you'll find typically that we're pretty comfortable with ourselves. You know, mm-hmm. you do go through, you know, things as a kid, right? Like everyone's growing and changing into their body, right? And if you have a limb difference, obviously that affects you a little bit differently as well. But I think a lot of the time when people are having difficulties, it's because they've had to make a big change in their life. So limb loss, like, you know, when they're an acquired amputee, whether through trauma or mm-hmm. surgery or cancer or something like that, diabetes, it becomes that they're having to adapt to this new thing. And so, yeah, I really do love the tech aspect of it. I really do love all of it. It was something that I've grown up with having to be a part of my life, right? I charged my body at night, every night before I went to awesome. Sleep. Like, that was just something that I grew up doing and thinking was normal, you know, in the morning getting dressed or when my friends came over, like, Mom, where's my arm? And everyone would be laughing. And it was just like, this was my norm, right? Yeah. You know, just like you grow up that way. And I was a normal kid. And even thinking back to acting, when you're asking about roles that I wanted to play, like I'm normal, right? That's normal to mm-hmm. me. So, you know, I do think that it's very important that I continue to play like bionic this, amputee that, that people with these differences play those roles. But also at the same time, like, why can't I just be the daughter, the girlfriend, mm-hmm. the sister, right? Because you'll see me shopping for groceries wearing this. Like, why can't I just be the person in the grocery store? But we're not there yet. You know, we're working on it with diversity stuff. Yeah. You know, we're working on people realizing that this is the normal, you know, seeing someone with a cool bionic hand out or just seeing someone with a limb difference out, you know, anybody like that at all, just we exist. And to have that represented better in TV and film mm-hmm. would be really cool too.
Well, I heard you say stuff like you don't like it when people try to, you know, volunteer a bunch of needless help to you when you don't need help, for instance.
Yeah, that's a big one, right? The idea is a lot of us, mm-hmm. We know what we're doing, and I can do a task. Maybe I can do a task faster than you, mm-hmm. right? And if I saw you doing something and I thought in my head, I can do that faster than him, should I ask someone, say, hey, do you need me to do that for you?
Yeah,
how totally. Mad would you be,
very
right?
Mad. Yeah, it's, yeah, it's an insult.
It's the idea that like, they are automatically assuming that I'm going to be not able to do this task.
They're
as
a
well
hero,
as them.
I'm sure.
Right. They're going to be a hero. And, you know, I appreciate the thought process, right? I know people have the best intentions, you know, growing up the way that I have, you know, you think that, you know, that people are not trying to insult you, not trying right. to offend you. You have to keep that in mind. Some of the times when you hear some of these comments where you're like, they meant well. I tweeted about it the other night. I had a woman at the gas station who said, oh, poor baby, what happened to you?
Oh, man.
And immediately. Yeah. And I was like, ugh, in my head, like, I was like, cringe. But I was like, oh, nothing. I was born without my arm. I wear a prosthesis. And she said, oh, bet she could still kick someone's ass though.
Yeah, yeah.
That, and I just yeah. thought it was the best way to loop back around. I'm like, yeah.
That's interesting, very much. So here's where it becomes really interesting to me is I've thought about and had people on the show before and discussed transhumanism, which is a term you're mm-hmm. familiar with.
Absolutely.
Okay. I'm not any, I don't know that much about it. I'm not way into it. I don't go to the conferences or anything like that, but I just love thinking about the concept. And, I don't know if everybody's that familiar with it. And so when we talk about ability, disability and technology in the future, which is, man, just where my head's usually at, you know, whatever you might be, if somebody wants to say disability, it's not that I love the notion, and it's certainly possible that you're arm and your abilities will be better than any of ours. And I don't even know what the timeline is on that, but or what the possibilities are there. But that's very fascinating. And yeah, I'm curious how you think about transhumanism itself.
So I'm actually friends with a lot of transhumanists. For some reason, my voice moves.
No problem.
I'm friends with a lot of transhumanists. I actually have gone to Body Hacking Con the last 3 years. I hosted it this year, whole conference. Yeah. So I'm friends with quite a few transhumanists. But the thing was, when I first got invited, right, to be a part of this, I had no idea what I was getting into. Mm-hmm. it was the idea that I thought, I knew that there were other amputees going. The first conference I went to that I found out about this was called Geek Picnic in Russia. And it was some amputees that wore high-tech prostheses like me. And then it was some other people that I wasn't really sure what they were up to. And there's someone there named Neil Harbison, who he was born colorblind, and he had implanted this camera that comes over the top of his head, kind of similar to an anglerfish, right? Mm-hmm. And instead of seeing color, he hears a tone for whatever color he's looking at.
Awesome. Because it makes the analysis and translates it to a different sense. Yeah.
Exactly. It's a whole new sense. Then there's Moon Rebus, who has like a seismograph in her elbow so she can pick up earthquakes activity.
Whoa, I don't know. I never heard of that.
Rich Lee, who has come up with the Levtron 9000, which is like a vibrating pelvic implant. Like there's this all
Wait,
these different things.
What does that do?
It's a vibrating pelvic implant.
Right.
So it's typically for your partner, I would say.
It was,
yeah. So there's people that have come up with all these different things, right? And I pretty much. It's called the Levtron,
okay.
Right? So Levtron 9000. But no joke, that is the
name
of the product.
That's great. I love the embracing of the yeah. Spoofy technology,
exactly.
Naming and stuff. That's great.
Yeah. And all these people that I met, I was like, I thought I knew about tech, and then all of a sudden I was like, whoa. And they had this idea of the fact that, this is your body and you're allowed to do what you want with it, and whether that's adding a sense, changing a sense. And for me, I was born without my arm. Technically, I'm not replacing anything. I never had a left hand. I'm adding something that's new and different and functionally, I didn't have lights in my right hand either. I'm adding things that I want to. And so I also have an RFID chip in my hand, which is one of the things that I got at Body Hacking Con in my sound side, not my prosthesis.
And what does that do?
So I don't know if you've heard about the RFID chips or the NFX chips. They're I don't know if you're gonna be able to, you can see it, but it's in between right there, that
yep,
little piece.
I see it.
So that's the size of a piece of rice, and it's in between my thumb and my index finger, and you can scan them, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have one of the readers on your phone, like if you have an Android, you can do a reader. iPhone's getting a little better at it, but they don't like it as much. You can put information on it. So there's a guy in Australia who I'm friends with. His name's Meow. legally changed to Meow Meow. He's a scientist, like a neurophysicist, real smart guy. But he implanted his, in Australia, they have Oyster cards. It's like a subway card.
Mm-hmm.
His is in his hand. And there was just a huge court case because Australia didn't like that. But it's the idea that anything that you can do with a key card, like you would for an office or an apartment building or anything like that, I can have implanted in my hand. So from unlocking my house, my car door, anything like that, you won't need keys with you anymore. Mm-hmm. I also have the technology in my prosthesis, but at the conferences, a lot of times with these transhumanists, they're like, well, what about when you take off your arm? And I'm like, all right, let's do it then, I'll be a cyborg.
So you really embrace that community then that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They're so accepting of everything. And I know it's a hard sell for a lot of people.
Oh, totally.
There's some people that are like, whoa.
A lot of people stop right there. I mean, we hadn't gotten anywhere yet compared to where we're headed with transhumanism. But a lot of people get off the bus right there at the implanted chip. Just the sound of that is pretty much a deal breaker to most people.
Happened recently. I read an article about it. There's a soda company that does the machines. I can't think of what they're called. Like Coke machines type thing, but not Coke. And they were having their employees do implants because it was one of the ways that they could do something with the machine and read it. And they said only half of the employees agreed to do it. And the other half were like,
What are some features and body hacking things and transhumanist stuff that it seems like is possible or coming? Are you aware of, you got any good things on that of where we're headed?
The thing with biohacking and body hacking is they have to be very careful because it's not medical, right? The idea is, you know, the FDA has watched them carefully and the medical community has watched them carefully. So one of the cool things that my friend Gabriel Lucina did had to do with like night vision drops that were really cool. And I thought that was something that now that he's done it, I'm sure more people are going to be looking into how to do this, you know, hopefully, you know, in a commercially available sense. And there's been a big thing with, this isn't as much as altering your body, but making your own medications because it's not as hard as people think it is, like, you know, and as expensive as it's supposed to, as it is, like, you know, with all these things. So the biohacking community just has all these different facets that we can look into. Now in tech in general, not just biohacking, there's been so many research studies on adding a finger. That's been a big one recently. There's been an extra arm. Georgia Tech did an exterior drum arm. So my friend Jason Barnes is known as the bionic drummer. Georgia Tech helped him develop, or he helped Georgia Tech develop a myoelectric drum arm. Mm-hmm. So literally, it has two sticks, one that he controls myoelectrically with his body, and the other one is computer controlled to help. So he has his sound side, so three sticks total. And the other one's computer controlled that's supposed to complement whatever he's playing. It hears it and then complements it.
Which is software and analysis and all that.
Yep. So as a drummer, though, I think, you know, he doesn't like it some of the times because he wants to play what he wants to play and he doesn't want it to.
The ghost computer played a wrong 16th note that he did. Exactly. Wasn't his artistic expression, now was it?
Exactly. Oh my gosh. But Georgia Tech also recently developed a third arm for drumming. So it's, you know, two sound arms and then an extra exterior arm.
Oh my gosh.
So they've been doing some cool stuff too. Now, this is all research stuff. Who knows if it's going to ever be commercially available for people to buy. But there's been some cool stuff, products that I'd be interested in if they ever end up on the market that have to do with like haptic feedback. I don't actually have any feedback within my arm. It's the idea that I have to practice. You think about like driving a stick, like, right, driving manual, like you, when you first start, right, you have to think about it,
right?
You know, go to set this gear, that gear, right? That's how it is. You have to learn. I have to like flex this muscle, flex that muscle to get to here and turn my wrist. But after a certain amount of time, you kind of just do it, that muscle memory, or you just drive to work without thinking about shifting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the other thing is grip pressure. I can't feel how hard I'm squeezing. So I have to practice either on myself or like on an egg or on things like that to make sure that I'm not squeezing a kid's hand or breaking eggs when I don't need to.
Yeah.
Right?
So the technology is, okay, I'm going to have to talk about this actual arm of yours for a little bit till I understand it. Okay, let's see. There's the part about how it interfaces to your, just for the basics of it, how does it interface neurally, or to how does it get your intentions to grasp in the first place?
Yeah. Okay. So it's myoelectric. So myo's muscle, right? So it's muscle impulses.
Mm-hmm.
So how it works is that there are two sensors, electrodes placed within my socket. So my arm can come off and on. I take it off at night to charge it, set it next to my phone. Because I'm what's called transradial, I'm a below elbow amputee, I'm about 2 inches after my elbow.
Mm-hmm.
I can literally just pop this thing on and off. You know, it's relatively easy for me, as opposed to other people, if they're higher, like what's transhumeral, like above elbow,
mm-hmm.
they have to wear like a harnessing system. It takes more time. And then that leads to more of the implantable titanium rod type devices that only have to do with how it's held on, not control. But I'm not at that point yet because below the elbow aren't very good. But so how it works is there are sensors that sit within the socket. And when I flex the muscles in my arm on my residual side that would typically control the muscles that control your wrist and your fingers, it allows me to control the hand. So it's similar to bending my wrist is what I'm technically doing to open and close. And then to change grips, I do what's called an open-open. So you'll see, like, it's like I'm flipping my wrist back. That's what I'm doing with my residual limb. All within the socket. So these electrodes are picking up these really tiny muscle impulses within my residual limb. And I've programmed them to do different things from like controlling my wrist to my hand. I have a software program on my computer where I can say like this muscle impulse means this.
How many muscle impulses are possible?
So it really just depends on how many muscles you can isolate. So when you think about, truthfully, the thought process here has been that acquired amputees, whether it's from trauma or an accident, you know, something, a surgery, that the sooner you put a device on them, the more impulses they're going to be able to remember and deliver. Now it starts to get fuzzy with congenital amputees because I've never had a hand. I don't know what muscles move what way or how they're supposed to work. So recently I got to do some pattern recognition software testing, which is I had 30 electrodes in my arm to pick up very minute impulses. And I got 7 muscle impulse specific muscle patterns, which is different from what I currently do. I think I've heard of someone having 10 as of right now, but
10 unique things that you can reliably recreate that the arm
right within within your arm. So if you think like doing a fist and watching what your arm does, pointing your finger and watching what your arm does, they have to be distinct enough right now because everything's surface. When we're talking about new technologies, what I can't wait for is the implantable electrodes. None of that currently is commercially available, so you can't buy it. A lot of research places are doing it from like Johns Hopkins and things like that, different hospitals, as well as private companies, and private typically moves faster, are implantable electrodes. The government's been doing them with veterans recently. They won't take me, obviously, I'm a civilian. But with veterans, they look like similar to my electrode, in my, I mean my our chip in my hand. They're about the size of a grain of rice, and they implant them into the muscle fiber all around your arm. And instead of having to have the socket squeezing my arm, I could just have it affixed up here or affixed somewhere else. It wouldn't have to be the way that is fit currently because everything is internal.
Yeah. So it doesn't have to allow take the extra. More,
exactly. And would allow for more positions because it's picking up those smaller muscle movements.
So, and then you could train unique ones, even if they weren't based in the way that your other arm works or somebody else's.
Exactly.
It's just how many gestures and commands can you articulate yourself, and then you could program however you want. You could program them backwards. So it reminds me of a video game interface. Like, you know, the first time you pick up a Xbox controller and it has two sticks, and you know, there's the alternate ways. You can have it where if you push up, it looks down. Like or you pull back, it goes up like a plane, or it can be the true thing where you push it and it goes down, and all those
things.
That's
a great comparison.
And they're all programmable too. So, you know, once you play with a controller enough or any interface to anything, it disappears and it just becomes natural to you. And so that
and then
obviously if you start with those implantable ones, but at some point are we heading toward, you know, neural commands? Like, so it goes to your brain, and if your brain, you can imagine what, you know, what your arm wants to do, it could do it. Is that something that people work on actively, or is that?
Yeah, right now there's actually, they've actually been doing that for the last couple of years, doing some different like neural interfaces, but the problem becomes they haven't wanted to do it with amputees as much. They've been doing it more with quadriplegics because they don't want to damage any sense of function that you currently have. Mm-hmm. So what they've been doing is having like a bionic arm, and you know, leg, different thing, like mostly arms, because arms are more bionic than legs currently.
Can you define bionic for us?
Yeah, so it's funny because it's a broad term right now. Bionic typically tends to reference these more high-tech myoelectric devices that are powered by your body. Bionic can mean so many different things, and it's just become one of those like catch-all words at this point in time.
But it differentiates from prosthetic in this case, at least.
Right, exactly. A prosthetic could be completely passive. It's manual. It could be a hook. A prosthetic is a huge
term. Yeah, I was just laughing because apologize if this doesn't land right, but I was just watching the movie Kingpin, which is one of my favorite movies. Do you find, is that a movie that you would dislike?
I like Kingpin,
I don't know if that seemed, now that I say that it crossed my mind, I wonder, does that seem mocking or not?
But, no, because a hook, to me, like Kingpin used the hook forever. It's not like Captain Hook. Like, that's a real hook. So the idea is, some people say, like, when I say hook, they think like a hook.
Yeah.
Like, a hook is a device. Right. Like, they're actually super practical and useful for the people that want to use them. This hand, because it's tech, think about, it's like your iPhone, right? Mm-hmm. Think if you were going to work construction or a busy job, like any type of manual labor job, you're not going to use your iPhone. You're going to use, you know, that's why people put the OtterBoxes on their phones, right? Or these Toughware.
Yeah, there you
go.
That's a good analogy.
The hook is more so meant for these heavy duty type jobs. these arms are not there yet to be used, you know, to ride a rodeo bull. Like, they're not there. I wish when we're getting there, but they're still, like I said, these small motors, these things that are great because they can have a small size hand, but still not as powerful or strong enough as it would be, you know, to do some of these things that we can with our sound side.
Makes sense. So that makes me think the other way too. If you can have implants and communications going one way, and we're talking about haptic, it would be the other way. So at some point you may be able to get sensation from the prosthetic back to relate to your brain so that there is a sensation, an actual sense that you receive, which is probably one of the difficulties now, is that there's no tactile part of feeling a resistance or slipperiness or whatever, things like that.
Right. Absolutely. That's a great thing to bring up. That makes perfect sense. And once they are able to do this, they hopefully will be able to wire these things in better to say that I can send and receive these types of information. And slipping is a great point, because with these hands, right, when I'm holding, say, a glass, a cup, anything like that, a backpack, say, you know, when you go to zip a backpack and it's really full and you're trying to pull it, and my hand will slip off of it and I'll say, gosh, I wish I could grip harder. And it's not that you need to grip harder. Think about how hard you're gripping it with your sound side. It's the fact that it was slipping and I didn't know.
Adjustment.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's not having that feedback. So I'm excited. That's what you just said is one of the things that I'm most excited for, is to have these implantables that can send and receive information.
Mm-hmm. So how does the software part of it work? How does it interface? I mean, you don't have a USB port on there, right? Do you?
I have Bluetooth.
Okay. So it's Bluetooth to the software where you can change the gestures and okay. That's awesome. So go ahead.
Depending on the different type of hand you have, I wear Be Bionic. Mine has a software program on my computer. There's another hand that has an app. So it just depends on, you know, which device you're wearing and, how you want to program it. So I can go through and say, turn up what we refer to our gains. Technically, a lot of times with the Be Bionic, the user isn't supposed to use this as much. The prosthetist is supposed to handle it more, because it is some things that if a user wasn't familiar, they could mess up, very like specific things, like what we call the gains. So it's like these dials that you can turn within the electrodes or within the hand. And it says how strong of a muscle impulse you need to send. Because think about it. If you went to grab something, say if you received pressure downward, your arm would automatically flex, right? You see where my forearm, like, just because you're pushing down. So sometimes if that was similar to your open signal, all of a sudden you drop something that you were holding because of that force. So they have to say, actually, you need to send out more of an impulse than you would receive in this manner, so you doesn't inadvertently trigger it, right? Mm-hmm. So your gains have to do with that, saying like you need this much or this little. Sometimes people who are required amputees say they have a lot of scar tissue. Their signals are very weak in the beginning because it's trying to get through all of that until they work at it more and practice more, and that stuff kind of wears down. They can turn the gains up really high so they can pick up those really light impulses. So that's something that you can adjust in the software. My arm, if you can hear, it beeps when I change grips. That's something I like, because if I do send an inadvertent signal and accidentally change grips, I want to know.
Gosh. Okay. So I understand that now that you say that, but again, something I wouldn't have thought of. So you change grips, so it's going to be a totally different thing. And if it did not beep, you could reach out to grab somebody's hand and then a weird thing happens.
So my two grips that are back to back right here are what's called lateral. So like if I close my hand, this is lateral. This is typically what I would use to shake someone's hand. If I'm in lateral normally, right? I just go and shake their hand. If I accidentally change, I might end up in finger point, and then I go to shake their hand and I'm going to do one of these, right?
Yeah.
That doesn't hurt anyone. A little embarrassing for me. So it's one of those things where, like, I like the beep because it lets me know where I am and I can hear it, as well as there's also a vibrate. It's very minor. People are like, that sounds, you know, jarring. And I'm like, no, it's like a little, it's in the wrist way up here. So it doesn't feel intense, but it lets me know if I'm in a loud room, I can still feel something, you know, that I'm like, oh, I changed grips on accident.
Oh, this is really, that's really exciting to think about. That's really, really, really neat. I wish people could see it, but I'm sure you can look it up. But it's really cool to see it and hear it in real time. I know they can hear the sounds on the audio, so that's neat enough to me. So it interfaces with Bluetooth. So in the arm itself, there's a processor, a whole computer section. Is that very, very small, I imagine, though? Like, it could be put into even a lot smaller prosthetics than the whole arm. Is like, is there plenty of room in there for all the stuff or what?
I'm sorry that everybody can't see this, but so all of the smart stuff is in here.
Okay.
So just in my hand. So in the arm, I have the batteries, the electrodes, the cables that lead and send my signal to the hand. But everything from the motors.
She's holding her hand in her other hand now.
I am, yeah. So if you can hear me, put it back on. So my hand has all the smart stuff in it. So the computers, the motors, the processor, you know, everything that powers the hand and interprets all that information is in the hand. Mm-hmm. Which is amazing that they made it so small. So this is the first ever small size multi-articulating hand that came out 3 years ago. Before that, I was wearing hands that were three times the size of my hand almost.
Can you tell me, aside from, I don't know, subsidy or anything else going on, what your unit there is worth? What it costs? I mean, you know, I'm sure it works out different ways and how you interface with programs, but just the actual, if it just the list price of a thing like that or the value of it, do you know what it is?
So that's the issue, is because it's a medical device. Mm-hmm. It really just depends on so many things. Mm-hmm. So there's the hand, just the hand, if you wanted to buy just the hand, which you wouldn't do. And then there's wrist units. I actually have another hand here. So this is my other hand that I wear, which is the same Be Bionic hand, different color, but also has a second wrist joint. So
I have features on a different hand.
Right.
Amazing.
So I have a rotator, right?
Yeah.
That spins all the way around if I wanted to.
Yeah. So right now her hand is spinning 360.
And then I have my flexion extension. So that's two different wrist units. So hand, two wrist units. And then I have flex cell batteries, which are kind of a more expensive battery because they're thinner and lighter. And I think I feel like they hold more charge. But for someone who's what I refer to as short, my arm's short, having a lot of weight is not a good thing. Uh-huh. So I like the lighter batteries. I also have, I go to a specific, they specialize in upper limbs. So my arm is all customly made, right? Everything on it. I also have covers that are interchangeable to match my outfits. So let me take off my hand. So like this all comes off and you can see inside my arm.
Oh my gosh, that is so cool. Yeah.
My lights, so I have like all the lights, the wires, the battery right there. As you can see how charged my arm is. That's my charging cord.
Yeah, this is amazing.
So that's the thing is like, I'm sorry guys, you can't see. But yeah, so it's one of those things where it's so modular that it can range, you know, so you want to know there's a difference between list price because the way this is done, because it's a medical device, is it has to go through a prosthetist, right?
Yeah, I'm
you
sure
can't
that
just
screws it all
buy
up.
One.
Yeah.
Now you can go on eBay and occasionally people will have them listed, but that's very illegal. It's very illegal. I mean, keep your eye out. Nobody's going to catch you if you really want one. But yeah, it's very illegal to do that because it's a medical device. But how it works is it's like a mechanic, right? You go to the mechanic and you're like, I want this. They're going to get everything that you need. So my prosthetist would sit down with me and say, what do you want? And I would say, this is the kind of things that I want to do and blah, blah, blah. And my prosthetist would say, the Be Bionic hand is best for you. Maybe we'll add in a wrist rotator and a flexion wrist, and we'll use flex cell batteries. And we'll use, this is called a Munster style suspension, and all else covers. He goes, that sounds good for you. Mm-hmm. So then he will go out and get all of these things. Mm-hmm. So he buys them, right? And then at the very end, they bill the insurance for the device.
So that obscures real market value of anything.
Right. So when you're wanting to say, like, I could tell you, like, maybe, I guess, how much the hand costs to him. But then again, he's putting in all this work, or he, she, they're putting in all this work to make this device. And then they also get paid for their work, right? So parts plus labor, you know. I could say that my hand was billed out at around $80,000.
The hand itself?
The device.
The whole system. Yeah, I was going to say it's got to be in the tens of thousands, and then it probably does inflate when you deal with insurance, of course. And then in the future, it'll just drop as technology hopefully the more private sector involvement and things.
Same thing with 3D printing. It's like, I really hope that the printers drop down in price. It's any of those things. The more they exist, the more you hope that, you know, the cost will not be as much.
Mm-hmm. And so people are just going to go crazy with this. It's so exciting to see it. I've not really, I mean, it's farther along than I guess I was expecting, which is just, And now when you say the term modular and show me those lights, and the people are going to go crazy with this. It's like, it's not, it really will be like, people may resist it or say weird things about this type of thing. But once they see it in the real world and people get excited about it, it's going to be like they mod out their Hondas and, you know, and they're just going to, they're going to be showing it off and yeah. outdoing regular human stuff in no time. Like, and they're going to bump right into competitive sports. It's going to be a real, I mean, it's like, you can hit a home run.
That's already been an issue, right?
I mean, it's got to be an issue. I mean, I guess the first of that would be the blades that the people run on. I guess
Well, there's actually a powered blade that's come out recently that allows you to exert less. So the blades actually are as long as they're done at the right height, they're fine. They're not actually doing any more, quote unquote, than people think. But when people, if they're bilateral, missing both their legs, and they make themselves, you know, 6'9", then you're exerting less force than you would have been, right, otherwise. So that's a little bit on the iffy side. I have a lot of Paralympic athlete friends who are worried or are going through this currently. But there's a blade that came out. Hugh Herr is a researcher that works through MIT. He's also a bilateral amputee himself, missing both of his legs below the knee. And he came up with the first ever commercially available powered ankle. So it's a bionic ankle. It's called, it's really cool. It's called the Empower ankle. And he also has a blade. I'm not sure exactly how it works, but it somehow has the power in it to be able to exert less force at the right height. So Amy Mullins, who's an actress, she was on Stranger Things. She's bilateral, BK, below knee. And she's a Paralympic athlete. She spoke to the Paralympic committee about it, and they were like, absolutely not. So it's already been, you know, I think she just did it just to get a reaction. I don't think she actually wanted to, but, you know, we are getting there. We're getting to a place where all this cool stuff is happening, and I'm hoping that people embrace it. And, you know,
they'll have to. I mean, on one hand, it sounds like X-Men or something. People have these superpowers where they're not superpowers now, they just will be. And then it's like one guy on the construction site that could put on these two arms, can, you know, move a load of bricks and do masonry work that he has a modular setup for, and he'll be faster and better than the traditional guys that lay masonry, and he'll be worth $150 an hour to do his bricklaying.
I think commercially available exoskeletons are going to be out in the next 10 years.
They have to be. I mean, it just seems like, I mean, just...
they're being worked on right now. I've actually seen some really cool ones. Hugh Herr, the one I was just talking about, he has a really amazing exoskeleton that he's been working on, and like, there's no way they're not going to be commercially available in the next 10 years.
And it'll be very disruptive, but I mean, I'm excited.
It's just a new normal, right? Yeah. It's the idea of what did we do before cell phones? Mm-hmm. You remember having to call someone and say, like, I'll meet you at the mall in an hour, and then they wouldn't show up. And what'd you do? You had to leave because there was no way to contact them. And then they were like, oh, I was stuck in traffic for an hour. I'm sorry. But that was just the way things happened then.
Yeah.
Now everybody could call everybody within 10 seconds and find out what's going on and where you are. So it's just going to be a new way to do things. Have you watched Altered Carbon yet?
No, my wife's been watching it, so I've caught some of it, yeah. But
yeah, and so like seeing this new normal of how people are going to have to figure out how they do things.
Right.
And it's always good to think about, you know, the way that things can be abused and privileges of, you know, it's always good to think about that stuff as well.
Coming, yeah.
Exactly. There's always the ethics of it. But at the same time, like, I think the benefits are going to outweigh all of that.
Well, these things are kind of runaway in a sense. So this is the and there's so many technologies, not just this one, that we're going to deal with artificial intelligence and other computing things. And there's going to be tons of these. But the problem is, on a lot of stuff, it's easy for people, genetic editing, all that stuff. People think, well, we should not do it because it's scary.
Right.
And people wouldn't do it if it was a sacrifice or difficult or cost them more money and was scary, people won't do it. But these things aren't going to go that way. They're going to be demonstrably better. And the human envy part is, holy crap, look at that guy. I mean, he's got that and it's working out great for him. I totally changed my mind. I've got to get one too. That's the way people will see it once it's out there. And if not, there'll be territories and regions and governments that try to ban it, which we always know is going to be weird, even though there's good reasons to try to regulate things that could be dangerous. I get it. But if United States says, we're not doing any of this, we're outlawing all these, you know, amazing exoskeleton things for that in the workplace. Well, China won't, and Japan won't, and Australia won't. And then as soon as we see them getting the edge, everybody, okay, we'll do it too. So it'll make itself go. I mean, it'll take, and all the people that think they're not into it, they'll get with it once it's demonstrated to be an actual advantage, I believe.
Well, one of the arguments I think it has to do with religion a lot of the times is like the God-given idea of it. Like, this is the body you were given. This is the, which comes up in the show Altered Carbon as well, is the way that they have what they refer to as stacks that keep them alive, and like changing stacks and different things like that, a new body. And whether that's, appropriate within your morality. It's just the idea of like, I feel like if it exists, the technology exists, it was being, if you believe in that way, right? If it's being allowed, then, if it exists in this world, it's for a reason. So, the technology has been developed and it's there for a reason.
Well, see, I mean, I've spent most of my life in the Christian circles and the people that are afraid of Mark of the Beast and everything else. I know those people pretty well. And you go all the way back through history, and even them, they love to make a bunch of noise and raise Cain and be against things, and then they get with it too, just slower. Eventually, whatever the thing is that they were afraid of, desperately afraid of 100 years ago, nobody cares anymore. The demons and the TV and the radio and what, I don't know. There's just countless things that they've opposed until it was like, oh, it's not a big deal. Like, people were upset about the euro currency. I mean, it's fine. And once if you see it's fine, the people get with it.
That's a funny example.
So
that's true. Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm always optimistic about that, but that just depends on the development and everything like that. You feel like the private sector is being allowed to play here, and the medical community? Is there any people that seem like they're problematic at this point, or slowing development anyway, or is it proceeding nicely overall?
So there's so many things going on. I feel like part of the problem is that nobody is talking to each other. And I get it. People, especially in the private sector, they want a commercialization, right? Capitalism. They want to be the ones to put this out. They don't want to share information. So many people are working on the same thing. Mm-hmm. And like, if they just shared information, we could surpass that.
I see.
And it's just, it's for a user, right? It's frustrating. Like, I get it from their perspective, right? They want to have this proprietary, exists in their realm and all of that.
Good point.
But at the same time, like, when I get 30 different emails from companies telling me that they're developing a new myoelectric hand and they're, we want to hear about, and I'm like, too many other people are doing this. Why are you?
They're all
why are you
spending
not working
a couple of billion dollars in R&D, and they want to be the ones that profit from it. So, but nonetheless, if you put all that money together, it would be way less money, and you get farther faster.
Or even if the fact is like you found out someone else was doing it, saying, oh, okay, you're doing that. Well, then I'll do this part of it. Mm-hmm. Like control systems, the way that we control the devices, the hand is great. The hands that we're currently developing, all these joints, the articulation that we have in is fantastic. I can't utilize so many things that this hand is capable of because the control strategies have only started to be changed in the last 2-3 years, mm-hmm. right? Before that, the control strategies we had hadn't been adjusted since the 70s.
Wow.
So it's like the hands had been being worked on the last 20 years. They've been updating the hands, two big jumps in the last 20 years, right? Big jumps. There's, big jump, kind of, then big jump. Like, it goes relatively well. But the idea that the control systems are something that they've been avoiding, and the suspension, how it's held on, has been something they haven't discussed as much. Mm-hmm. So or wrist units. They've been doing so much with hands, but there's no flexion. There's no powered. Like, I have to manually, it's not the wrong hand, I have to manually move my wrist.
Yeah.
So, like, I can't, like, actually move my wrist unless I'm, like, pressing this button.
Interesting.
So, as opposed to this wrist, I can rotate, right?
Yeah.
That I can power,
that's so
it's cool. Powered, right?
Yeah.
So, that's what's frustrating is that the only flexion wrist that's available right now just came out last year, an arm that I tested for the U.S. government put out by a company called DECA, sold by Mobius. It's the Luke arm, right? It has a flexion wrist that's powered, but it is not modular. It's only part of that specific device. So you have to wear the Luke hand and the Luke wrist and the Luke elbow and the shoulder, all these things like that.
So it doesn't work together, yeah.
So you have to have the hand and the wrist. I just want the wrist. Also, like I was saying, with the hands being big, the Luke arm is massive. I tested it,
Luke
right?
Luke is in it's, Luke Skywalker. Yeah, so Luke Skywalker and the Terminator arm are the two closest things probably in popular media that look.
Right.
And they, those existed way before they really existed. Is that?
Exactly. Right. I get that a lot where people are like, oh, that's like the Luke Skywalker arm. And people think, like, why can't you just get that arm? And I'm like, those aren't real.
Right. Especially whatever year that was.
I wish they were real. Yeah. I wish I could do, like, in Terminator, especially when he does this, mm-hmm. I'm like, ah. Like, I could program my hand to do this. I don't know how useful that would be, but it would be that, this grip pattern.
Right.
It wouldn't be what people think it is, the idea that you can have individual control over each digit instead of, like, and I don't know if people are understanding what I'm doing with my hand right now, but you know in Terminator where he, like, does this thing where he pulls his pinky down to his index where he kind of just, like, waves his fingers.
Yeah, a finger wave, yeah.
Yeah, which kind of shows that he has control over every digit. And, like, I can program the grip to look like that, but it doesn't mean what you think it means.
Yeah. Yeah. That, it's just a command being executed.
Exactly.
In a routine way. Yeah. Instead of organic. I don't know if that would be the exact word for it. Yeah. That's really interesting. Is there charities and things like that? Is there I'm sure you know, it'd be probably very depressing to think about. Globally, how many people could be helped if we could get technology down?
Oh, absolutely.
And stuff, who's able to have all the nice things that some people do and some people don't? That's kind of a tough area, right?
I mean, globally is a huge thing, but even within the United States, mm-hmm. like, these devices are insanely expensive, mm-hmm. like, incredibly expensive. And insurance companies, especially with these new devices that have come out in the last several years, have fought so hard to not cover them, mm-hmm. you know? And they like to blame it on the employer, which technically a lot of times it is the employer, I guess, would be technically how our system set up, their responsibility. But a lot of times employers don't think that way. So how it would work is, say, I got denied for 2 years for this hand. It took 2 years of fighting for this hand to be mine. Mm-hmm. And that's how frustrating it gets. Think about someone who just lost a hand, right? I was born without my hand. I had other options. I had other things that, like, it gets really frustrating when you think about how hard. They'll like to say things like, it's not medically necessary for you to have that type of device. We'll give you a hook, or we'll give you a lower tech one.
That's so tough.
Which is, or they'll say, the technology is still experimental. That's not a medical necessity to provide that. Mm-hmm. We actually just hit this with microprocessor needs. So if you remember how when people walked, if they were missing their knee and they wore prosthesis, you'd see them do this thing where they had to kick, right? They had to kind of kick their leg forward. Mm-hmm. That's why their gait looked kind of off. The new knees have a microprocessor in them, right, that reads when you lift your leg and honestly does this auto swing.
Yeah.
So you don't have to manually kick from, like, your hip, you know, right? You're not throwing your leg out there.
Get momentum to it.
Exactly. You're not having to do that anymore. The leg does it for you. So they actually recently, I would say within the last 2 years, have decided that that is actually a medical necessity. They were like, oh no, you don't need that. Yeah. So, like, that was something that took forever. That's been out for 10 years. It took forever for them to agree that that was, like, oh, you're right. People need that.
That's interesting. So, but are there any movements or things to support? Like, what I'm asking now is, like, is there anything
there's grant
to do
programs.
That people could even help with or support or follow or anything like that?
Well, there's grant programs to help provide devices for people. I actually used a grant program to get what I was called my activity arm to work out. Obviously, like I said, I can't work out in this arm because it's, like, you know, taking your iPhone to go work out. It's more rough and tumble kind of thing. I have attachments for kickboxing and for yoga and things like that.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool. I was going to get it, but my mom took my car and it's in my car because I work out and leave it in there. but yeah, so there's an organization called Challenged Athletes Foundation. And it's a nonprofit that you can donate to, and they provide grants every year for activity-specific devices for people with physical differences. Mm-hmm. So it's really cool, and that's how I got my device, as well as there's another program called Arms Within Reach, which is just upper limb. It's very punny, right? Arms Within Reach. what else is there? There's several. Amputee Coalition is a huge nonprofit organization that helps with all of this around the world. Like, they used to be... it used to be just in the US. I forget what their name was then, but now Amputee Coalition is global. And they've been trying to find assistance and help and do all these different things for different people throughout the world. A lot of Toughwear Prosthetics has been doing a great job with, they've built a device that can be modified by size for a user. It's not powered because a lot of the areas globally don't even have, consistent power. but it's a body powered device that can work like a hook, but that can be modified as someone grows, right? So they don't need to be refit every year and things like that. That's very expensive. It allows for changes in the body without having, because I have to get refit for my arm every time. Think about it when a woman gets pregnant, right? Mm-hmm. Their prosthesis isn't going to fit anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many different, over 9 months, how much your body changes.
Oh yeah. People's shoe size changes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But as a kid, right, I got a new arm every year because I was growing.
Oh, that's so tough, because the child development part is obviously the most critical for it. There's a whole bunch of other stuff to talk about that we won't get into, emotionally.
Like, there's so many things about that, but it's one of those things insurance companies don't want to approve it, right? Mm-hmm. And when I say it's on the employer, it's your policy. So say you go to work for somebody and they say, here's your insurance policy. A lot of people never think to check prosthetics, right? If you're not an amputee already,
right?
But say you do become one, and all this, or your child is born without a limb, and all of a sudden the policy that you signed said, we're only required to provide this.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh crap. So like, you try to go to your insurance and ask for, you know, this, one of these devices, and they say, well, your policy says we're only have to provide you what's most basically necessary. And they're like, that's a hook. To me, most basically necessary is a human hand, which you can't provide. So you should provide what's closest to it. But they like to say what's most basically necessary is a hook. So
yeah, that's an interesting point of philosophy there.
It's debatable.
Yeah. Yeah, that's tough. I just think about kids, you know, like in a way it's been good for you that you were born congenitally without the arm, in a way. You would think, or correct me if I'm wrong about that, if you lost a limb, is that typically more difficult for people?
Yeah. I feel like it's just different levels. Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. like obviously if you lose a limb, it's much easier to get approved for a prosthesis because mm-hmm. the insurance company was like,
we have to replace it to get you back to your job, right?
So exactly. They assume that, you need this to do what you were doing before. Mm-hmm. I've been told from an insurance company that I should be used to it by now.
Oh no. Well, you look like you're getting along fine. Well, you're born this way. God made you that way.
Yeah. Here we go. Yeah. But then, who are they to make that decision? You know what I mean? Like you don't get to decide how my body performs or how, like, you know what I mean? That kind of thing. So, and then on top of that, but obviously in learning and relearning, kids are so plastic or so adaptable, right? You figure out anything. Mm-hmm. So it's the idea that, you know, I grew up learning how to do it this way. So I do feel like that is easier in the sense that relearning, especially as an adult, because your brain's so set in your ways at that point, right? Mm-hmm. That relearning to do a task that you've been doing for 30 years is pretty difficult. So there's its pluses and minuses in the situation. You know, people always ask me, is there like a rivalry in the amputee community between like, mine's harder. And I'm like, no, we don't really. I've never met anyone who's been like, yeah, but you're congenital. Like, nobody's ever done that to me or been like, oh yeah, but you're acquired. Like, that's never happened. And I hang out with a lot of amputees.
Well, I'm really impressed with it. You know, I'm just really impressed with the spirit of you and what it seems like to be other people that I've encountered or seen. And it's definitely just moving forward, make it better, get on with it. Like, it just feels like, it doesn't feel competitive, like that kind of stuff. Like, a lot of things are that way. And this community is just kind of exciting because it embraces tech, because it's clearly the solution. It's not political. And yeah, there's insurance stuff, but this is just work hard, save the money, share it, help the kids, kick the ball down the road. And of course, private sector, I know they're profit motivated, but good, you know, just move all those things forward. And that, it's just kind of really interesting to think about that one. And I just, again, I can't stop thinking about the kids. I really do get real irritated at my toddler when she outgrows her shoes and I have to buy new ones.
Exactly.
Like, can't you just stay a size 4?
It's like my mom, they remember when I started growing out of it, I would just take it and throw it across the room and they'd know, and they'd all just be like, oh gosh, it's too small. Like, they just know that it wasn't right anymore. I mean, I think I got 2 a year until I was 3 with the price of these things, right?
And
I mean,
it's like the most important time to develop and learn to use it and have the best stuff and get your other muscles going and compensating things and all that.
And like, I'm never going to argue with, there are a lot of congenital amputees and a lot of congenital amputee parents of kids who have these limb differences that come up to me and they say, oh, your arm's really cool, but my kid gets along just fine. I would never tell them that they don't. They do, because I can do everything that I want to do without my arm on. Just the idea is, most of these tasks, like we said, aren't designed for someone with a limb difference. So when I'm thinking of taking care of my body, I would rather do it with my device because I can do it more so the way it was designed, which is safer for me. Mm-hmm. I would never tell these parents that there's anything wrong with these kids because I know there's nothing wrong with me. You know, we're all fine. We can get along just fine. But if you want to try change it or possibly do something maybe better, maybe more efficiently, maybe safer, you have that option.
That's so cool. What's important. I love that when you were talking about the transhumanist vibe over there at the conferences is like, there's a real ethical part of it or progressive notion of, well, these are our bodies. We can choose what we do or don't do.
Right.
Or don't. Right. Do not enhance or enhance or embrace.
Yes.
Or do something way outside of, you know, what is
speaking
natural.
Of way outside. So there's a little girl. Her name is Jordan Reeves, and she has an organization she recently started called Project Unicorn. Mm-hmm. She's 11. And when you talk about she's congenital, like me, missing her arm, she's above her elbow. So a lot of the devices are crappy for someone her size, how small she is, to do what she wants to do. So she didn't like any of them. But you know what an 11-year-old does want to do? Shoot glitter. She made she 3D printed and designed an entire prosthesis that only, solely shoots glitter.
That's so good.
So the idea of, like you're saying, what you want to do and don't do, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, she did.
There's nothing I hate more than glitter around my house. I've got two little girls. So aside from the fact that I'm anti-glitter, that makes me delighted.
Oh, her mom said the same thing. Her mom's so funny. She was like, I don't know why this had to be what she wanted to do. But I'm going to support her.
That is just pure thinking and problem solving and creativity. Right. Busting out, and that is everything.
It doesn't need to be a hand. It just needs to be what you decide it should be.
I feel like kids have this, and I've been saying this for years, and I know it's true. If you can get the right kids at the right age doing the right creative parts of our society, they're going to come up with stuff that is not accessible to adults because we think in older patterns in different ways.
Right. Their brains just work so differently.
It's a direct thing. You don't go through the old pathways of how to replace this. You just think, what if I had a glitter shooting arm?
Yeah.
And that's just a fun one, but I mean, there'll be practical things. I'm sure there's software solutions.
There's a tentacle. Someone made a tentacle that's functional. That's pretty cool.
With suction cups on it or what?
I don't think there's suction cups, but it's like, there should be. I think it's foam, so it's pretty grippy, but it can bend. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, there's too much.
It's just
to think
the idea
about.
Of like, yeah, why not? Why not? You said with kids, like their brains aren't stuck in like what they know about because they don't know about that.
That's
much.
That's a good thing.
So they don't know that if this isn't something they should look into. Her arm, Jordan's arm, is literally shaped like a unicorn horn that has extra reloads of glitter on the side and has what's it called? Compressed air that shoots glitter. Like, why not? Like,
so happy because I bet she's happy about all that.
Yeah, she loves it. Like, yeah, she's great. And that's the thing
is,
the devices that she has what she refers to as her helper arm, which is similar to my activity arm because, mm-hmm. but all the powered arms right now are too bulky and heavy for her. Mm-hmm. You know, she just turned 11. She's smaller, like, you know, and to put this kind of weight on her, because like if you're missing your elbow, that's a whole nother electronic joint. Yeah. Those are heavy. Mm-hmm. We've just gotten to a point where we're reducing the size of the hand. And when you think about population-wise, almost 75% of the population of amputees is lower limb. So we're a very small part of the population. And then when you get to upper limb, there's the most of people missing digits. Then it goes to wrist disarticulation. Then it goes to transradial and then transhumeral. Mm-hmm. So when you're getting up here, it's such a small portion of the population that they don't work that hard on the elbows or the shoulders yet.
That's the problem with you know, cures to diseases that with drugs too. It's like, well, only 80 people in the world have this, and it would be curable for, you know, $20 billion. We could fix it, but it's not worth it to anybody to spend.
It just needs to get to a point where we can invest in it. Yeah, where we can invest in this kind of thing.
Very unfortunate, but my gosh, our time's up here, and I appreciate this so much. I really could do a lot more of this because there's so many fascinating things to think about. But my main takeaway is just I feel excited and encouraged by mostly the attitude and the forward thinkingness of this. I think this is what we should apply, this type of transhumanist and tech forward solutions. I really do believe it's what we should be using to solve more of our problems, from guns to other political stuff to almost everything. People just want to fight about what is. And when I think about these new ways of thinking and new things being involved and the way kids think freely and creatively, these are the things that are going to improve our society going forward versus trying to get other people to agree with you about something we've been arguing about for 100 years.
Right. It's moving on from what we've been doing to try to go to what we're mm-hmm. going to do. And hopefully that's what people are excited about, to see where we're going to be in 10 years.
Yeah. Because this attitude transcends just prosthetics and bionics. I mean, this right. is it's just a great way to be. But thank you for your attitude and your work and your willingness to not want to just move past this or hide it, but to just embrace it and educate other people and talk about it freely. I admire it so much. So thank you very, yeah. very much.
Yeah, thank you. This is me all the time. So
good. Well, good luck to you in acting and film and everything else. Do you have some new stuff coming out or things you want people to watch? I saw something that you said you don't have a release date for, but tell us about that.
Oh, I have Goliath comes out this summer. It's showing on Amazon with Billy Bob Thornton. So
oh, I
I'm
love
excited
Billy
about
Bob.
That. Yeah.
Did you get to work with
check
him?
Check it out. I didn't get to work on the scene with him. I worked on the scene with someone else who's a new character that I can't say yet. But I got to meet him and talk to them. And he's actually a really cool guy. You know, he gives off that vibe yeah. of being like kind of, you know, bad Santa, whatever. Right. He's so nice.
That's great. Well, so that's Goliath on Amazon this summer. Yeah, well, good luck to you with everything that you're doing. And we'll check back in and talk another time, I hope.
Yeah, sounds great.
All right. Appreciate it very much.
All right.
Hey there, I am Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold, and I've got a podcast called Drinks with Johnny you're going to want to check out. I sit down with a bunch of different people from all different walks of life, from professional wrestlers to actors, comedians, fighters, musicians, everything in between. I'm just looking to make some friends and have a good time doing it. So if that sounds like something you're into, go check out Drinks with Johnny, streaming everywhere now.
Hello. And welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book. And together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our 9th season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.